You know what time it is. It's time for Grating the Nerd. With your hosts, Tim and Zach. Take it away, boys.
Welcome back to Grating the Nerd. This is the show where Zach and I will check out all kinds of multimedia stuff. Usually it's geek related. When it comes to how we feel about it, I'm usually like a little sweet tart and Zach's like a mean old lemon head. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain, really. How's your week been? Anything fun and exciting going on?
No, not really. Yeah, not a lot. I mean, it's the beginning of the week, but like, in over the weekend, I just kind of jolt out. Like, I didn't really do a whole lot.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't bad.
Good. Good. I helped my brother-in-law on Saturday tear down a shed at some rental property.
Uh huh.
And I don't remember if I told you this off pod or not. It was. I'll try to get to the point quicker than longer. Behind this rental property, at some point, somebody had built this big shed and then built a smaller shed attached to the side of the big shed and then another smaller shed attached to the side of the medium shed, right?
Okay.
And so the two smaller sheds were like just dilapidated. So as part of he had a renter that passed away, and so he was kind of gutting the place to update it, and he was like, hey, while we're doing that, can you come over and help me like knock these sheds down and stuff? And I'm like, sure. So we knocked the two smallers down, and the bigger one was in nicer shape. So he's like, should I knock it down? I'm like, oh, dude, it's a good storage shed. It's big. You know, it's like tall. It's got like an attic space in it almost. So anyway, he was like, well, I don't have a key to get into it because the guy two renters ago put the door in and whatever. I don't know if he built it or something. But anyway, he's like, but I think that it was like a place to stay for his girlfriend when she was over. And I was like, no. Whoa. He goes, that's what the neighbor said. And I'm like, what? So anyway, we drilled the lock out and went in, and yeah, it had carpet in it and like old, like there was a packet of Oreos and like chips and unopened salsa in there and like pillows. And I was like, oh Jesus, my God. Yeah.
That is bizarre.
It was very bizarre, right? I was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, I don't know if that guy had built it, but it like had a window in it and stuff, and like with shades drawn over it. And I was like, what is happening? You know,
yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, it was very bizarre, man. He's like, I don't know if he was making his girlfriend stay out here, if he was renting this place out by the hour. My brother-in-law said.
So. I hope he wasn't like keeping people in there like against their will.
I hope not. Like, it had a hole in one of the walls where it's like a glory hole. No, it wasn't. It was like I don't know, an 8-inch diameter hole where it looked like I think he said that at some point he had like a space heater with like a little bit of like flexible ducting to that hole to like keep it temperate. And I was like, that's weird, man. Now, I will say there was like one of those like little play mats for like Hot Wheels. Like, it looks like a little city with roads, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe he had just fixed it up as like a little playhouse for like a kid or something. Cause I know like I've seen that happen before where people have like a shed in their backyard and they just fix it up as like a little playhouse for the kids to go out if they want to get out of the house, you know, and
right.
Go out there and play. So it was weird as hell, though. I was like, yeah. I hope there was nothing nefarious going on.
Yeah,
my brother-in-law is like, he didn't see anything, but he's like, it's a rental property. Like, once I get things fixed up, if they're paying the monthly rent, I'm not here a lot, you know? And right. I was like, yeah. So, very odd though, man.
Yeah, that's like, really weird.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't find anything in there, like, because it was full of stuff. We didn't find anything in there that, like, made it seem nefarious, you know?
Well, that's good.
But yeah. Yeah. So anyway, but, yeah, that's been about it, man. Just, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the boy is looking to start boxing classes. So I found a local gym that does like boxing classes and stuff. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. We went down and checked that out. Pretty cool little gym. we may go back this week and actually sign up. You know, we stopped in after dinner the other night just to see what they were all about. Anyway, yeah, that's been about it for me, man. Just same old, same old.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Before we get into it, you want to hear some news of the week?
Sure.
Okay, let's see. So let's start with our favorite, Abe Spider-Man. So a couple Spidey stories this week. Spider-Man No Way Home has officially this week, I think it was like a day or two ago, has officially passed the $1.5 billion mark worldwide.
Wow.
At the box office. Yeah. That makes it, and I mean, it's only what, like 3 weeks into run time
something
or whatever?
Something like that, yeah.
That, at this point, makes it the eighth highest grossing movie of all time.
Wow.
I know. It's just crazy, right? Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm interested to see where that ends up, especially in the current state of the world, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of wild. Also, if, and we'll talk a little bit of spoilers. I know it's been out for a few weeks, So, skip the next couple minutes if you don't want any spoilers at all about Spider-Man, if you haven't seen it still for whatever reason. some concept art got released this week. The concept art showed America Chavez in it. So okay. We know that she's coming in Multiverse of Madness. And originally, Multiverse of Madness was slated to come out before Spider-Man No Way Home. So, and the concept art shows her with a grimoire, a book of some sort, and it seems like she's pulling the other characters that we get in the movie into the universe. So it seems like the, hey, Ned is magic might have been a last minute ad to replace that, you know? So, yeah. So it seems like they very much may have been using her to pull these other people into the universe or whatever early on. And then when that movie wasn't out yet, they're like, well, we're not introducing her in Spider-Man. Figure another way out. And they were like, okay, I guess Ned's a wizard. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Kind of a big swing from the original concept.
Yeah.
So let's see what else we've got. In other Marvel news, we found out that the Echo Disney Plus series this week has reportedly enlisted some of the writers from the Netflix Daredevil and Punisher shows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it seems like they added them to their writer's room. So I don't know if that means because they were like, hey, you gave these characters good voices and they're coming back, or if it's just we liked the feel that you came up with and we thought the writing was good and we want to match that or what, you know? Uh-huh. So that's coming. And then in other rumored news, apparently there is a rumor that in the Ironheart series with Riri Williams, that the villain that she might in fact be facing in that is potentially going to be Obadiah Stane's son, Ezekiel Stane, who is in the comics. Uh-huh. But if you remember, Obadiah Stane was the big baddie in the first Iron Man movie, played by Jeff Bridges. And so there's a rumor circulating that the son or daughter, it says, of Obadiah Stane might be making their Marvel Cinematic Universe debut in Ironheart. So, like I said, in the comics, it's Ezekiel or Zeke Stane. Zeke Stane sounds weird. That sounds like a euphemism. I got a Zeke Stane all over the front of my pants.
Jesus.
But yeah, so in this, they're doing some version of that, it sounds like. So I'm interested to see that, you know, because, like, I mean, Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane, he was pretty great. So if they can get somebody with, like, half that personality, I think it'll work really well. Anyway, let's see. We've got one piece of DC news. I don't know if you saw that they've released some stills this week of
more Batman shit.
Batman stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see, I like the look of the Penguin a lot with his, like, plaid jack and stuff. What do you think about the Riddler's look?
God, man, I don't know. He looks like he's got like a gimp mask on and
yeah, he does.
Long coat that, like, the question mark looks vaguely like some kind of like a cult symbol, and
yeah,
It's just weird. I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, the question mark looks like it could be a cult, an occult symbol, or it's kind of crooked. And like, I'm like, did you try to draw that on while you had the jacket on? Like, what are you doing with the mask on? He's like, I can't see the loop. Where's the tail go? You know, like, yeah, it just looks ridiculous, man. Like, I like Paul Dano as an actor, but like I could not be less excited about this version of the Riddler. I mean, I even like the idea of the Riddler being roughly like a kind of crazy Jigsaw kind of person. They did that in the Arkham games a little bit. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I kind of dig that, but just this look and feel and everything is just,
it's
so
weird.
Dumb. It's so dumb looking. Like, I don't know, man. Everything I see about this movie, I'm less and less excited about it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just ridiculous. Penguin looks good. Colin Farrell looks good as the Penguin. So, I'm excited about that, but...
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Anyway, I don't know. You got any other thoughts on Batman?
No.
The Batman?
No, the Batman. I don't know, man. It doesn't look good to me. I'm not really that thrilled about it. And that seems to be, like, all the DC news we're getting lately is just... sprinkle of this Batman, sprinkle of that, it's more Batman. It's
right, like, well, that's how they run things, man. Like, they're a company, at least the movie division is a company that doesn't believe in their properties, is how I look at it, because
yeah, it seems like it.
They just, they're like, Batman is the only thing that can make us money, so fuck everything else.
Yeah,
it really sucks too, because they've got some great characters. Let's see. So we've got let me jump first to the next comic book thing we have, but it's not Marvel or DC. Did you see that there's a Scott Pilgrim Netflix animated series being pitched currently?
I think I heard about this somewhere.
Dude, I'm super excited about that. I hope that gets a green light. And we've talked before, like, I love the movie Scott Pilgrim, and the graphic novels are pretty great, and or the comics if you read them when they came out or still can find them anywhere. But yeah, I'm all for this, man. Yeah, it's an animated series that they're looking to make with the original creator, Brian Lee O'Malley. So yeah, man, I'm just excited. I like Scott Pilgrim, and so I would be very interested in seeing this. So I hope that it gets a green light. And the last bit of news I got, I don't know if you saw this. There is a new Paramount Plus movie coming for a continuation of Beavis and Butthead.
Oh God. No, thank you.
That was an amazing reaction. Oh God.
I can't help it, man. I like, it was funny when I was in sixth grade, but like, man, I feel like I outgrew it pretty quick.
Yeah, it's so the last time we saw anything from Beavis and Butthead was in 2011. The series got renewed or like revived, but it only ran for one season. Yeah. Mike Judge has released concept art of the Beavis and Butthead are like, they've aged up, like they're adults now.
Uh-huh.
In this. I can't find the synopsis. I thought that it was like they're adults and they're kind of struggling, trying to figure out how to, because they're still metal loving goofs, and they're trying to figure out how to like deal with like new technology and new generations and all that good shit. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know, man, but like, Beavis has got like a little bit of a pudge belly, and then Butthead's like a fat guy and like balding. And like, yeah, it looks interesting.
Huh.
I'm with you though. It's been so long. I'm like, is there like a big call for this? Like, are people like, I want more Beavis and or Butthead?
Oh, wow. Well, this was this, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess let us know if you're clamoring for Beavis and Butthead content. Yeah. I think that's all I've got on the news front. Do you want to get into what we're talking about this week?
Sure.
All right. So, let me see. It's a song. I know everybody loves to hear my wonderful dulcet tones. It's to the tune of I don't know, Zach, I know you don't really watch Always Sunny, but have you heard the song Day Man?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So it's to the tune of that from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's a song that Charlie writes for a music competition. So it's to the tune of Day Man, but here we go. Let's see. Gaiman, writer of The Sandman, captured and undone. He's a master of the dream world and nightmares for everyone. Neil Gaiman, writer of The Sandman, macabre but somehow fun, you're a master of the emo and acid trips rolled into one. Gaiman, writer of The Sandman, never seen the sun. You're neck deep in junkies, hellscapes, and heroes just trying to find your stuff. Sandman! That's right, we're going to be talking about the first collected volume, or 8 issues, of Neil Gaiman's run on Sandman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Very beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You should watch the Day Man song sometime. Even if you don't watch Always Sunny, it's fucking hilarious anyway. Yeah, man. So I was unfamiliar with, I mean, I knew who Sandman was. I knew about him in this world, in the DC universe at large, in the Vertigo series, but I'd never actually read the comic. So
I had not either.
This was the first time for me taking a look at these.
Yeah.
And like I said, we did the first 8 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you want to read your manifesto? I got to call it something else. It's not a manifesto.
Okay. Do you want to brainstorm that, or you want to think on it?
here, let's see. Let's call it your, I don't know, Zach's chicken scratch napkin thoughts.
That's pretty accurate, actually.
nice. Yeah, but I want to hear your overall take.
Okay, so this is. Do you want me to give you like my hot take before I read the synopsis, or my synopsis? I should say.
What do you think? You wanna go hot take first or hot take second?
Well, how about I read this to you and then I tell you what I thought?
Okay, sure.
Okay, all right.
Cool.
Bear with me. This is a long one.
All right, great.
I had to trim the fat on it. It was like 6 minutes when I first ran it, and I was like, ew. So.
You were like, it was like somebody who doesn't know how to give a speech. You were like, Webster's Dictionary defines sand.
Okay, so I tried to make this shorter. We'll see how it goes.
Sure.
The comic Sandman begins in 1916 in Wychcross, England, where a man and his cult capture a supernatural entity known as Dream, the titular Sandman, aka Morpheus. The cult is run by Roderick Burgess, a man who looks like a cross between Popeye and Gargamel. Roderick attempts to summon and imprison death in an effort to cheat the laws of nature, but through some fault perhaps of his own, he gets death's brother, Dream, instead. In a weakened state, Dream, the cartoon personification of Tommy Lee if he dressed in robes and gas masks, was stripped of his belongings and imprisoned in a magical orb or box. It looks like an orb on a metal stand, but they repeatedly refer to it as a box. Apparently in this universe, up is down is up, and circles are also squares.
Nice.
Anyway, while imprisoned, the natural order of sleep is disrupted around the world and many people are affected. There in his ball box prison thingy, Dream patiently waits in nude silence. After 72 long years, Dream manages to find a way to escape and finds himself in a time where the original captor is no longer alive. He's left with the decrepit remains of Burgess's son, Alex, instead. However, Alex is just as his fault. While I don't know what I was expecting, I was somewhat shocked by the level of restraint here. Alex is placed into a loop of endless nightmare, waking from one into another. A somewhat unimaginative revenge plot. But I guess if you only deal in dream powers, what else can you do?
Right.
It's from here Morpheus begins his long quest for his belongings. A quest fraught with drug addicts, street-savvy magicians, rhyming demons, legions of hell, and a naked madman who, due to his appearance, is thought as one side character have the Big A. It was the 80s, so I'll let you guess what the Big A was, but I'll give you a hint. They were not admiring his dump truck booty. Morpheus has to acquire a sand pouch, a helmet crafted from the bone of a dead god, and a red gem that he refers to as the Dream Stone, which is definitely not another euphemism for Morningwood. The quest features a cavalcade of DC faces. We see John Constantine, Etrigan the Demon, the first appearance of DC's Lucifer, who looks like Tilda Swinton doing a David Bowie impression, as well as Martian Manhunter, a flashback of Granny Goodness, Scott Free, aka Mr. Miracle, the Scarecrow, who's the spinning image of Egon Spengler, and last but not least, Dr. Destiny, otherwise lovingly referred to in this series as D. The pouch is recovered with the help of Constantine from a drug addict who, for whatever reason, Gaiman decided to describe in the state of her rotting body by beginning with a bizarre detail about her shriveled up breasts and hardened nipples. In a place where squares are also rounds, Gaiman must think that the nipple is the window to the soul. Next, we go to hell to acquire the helmet from a demon called Karanzan, where they engage in a battle, air quotes, which I can only describe as demon slam poetry. Some kind of weird word game where there's a lot of nuh-uh. Finally, he acquires his long-lost gemstone from John Dee, but not before we're forced to watch Dee massacre an entire diner full of people. In the end, Dream is reunited with his sister Death and tells her of what happened to him. It ends in a somewhat vague way, but it seems that the Sandman still has work to do.
Nice. That was a great great breakdown of what happened.
Yeah.
It's so funny because in my you mentioned Tommy Lee. He looks like Tommy Lee. In my song, I tried to work in a way to say, like, he looks like he's about to sing You Spin Me Right Round, Baby.
I just kept picturing, like, Tommy Lee with, like, way back when he was in Motley Crue and they had the huge black hair.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, so Dream has got to be based off Neil Gaiman himself, right?
Yeah, so I looked it up, and it is based off of a young Neil Gaiman and then a couple of other people.
Right. I mean, because the more I read through it, I was like, that's just him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like he's like crafting stories and, you know, for to help the world continue to turn. I'm like, wow, that's humble brag. the guy is good at what he does, though.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman, he's a great writer, man. Anyway. Right. So what's your hot take on this?
So I hate that I did not pick this up sooner.
Okay.
I started reading this one night and I burned through like the first four issues, and then I couldn't wait to start reading the next set, and then I finished that and I just wanted to keep reading, and so I went on for another 16 or 17 issues.
Oh wow. Okay.
So I read 24 of them total.
Nice. Okay. I fully admit I am going to read more. I stopped at these 8 because I didn't want to, like, I was worried that I would be like, hey, remember when this happened? You'd be like, that was in issue 12, you know? And I was like, oh.
Uh-huh.
So I stopped at these 8, but I plan on reading more of it.
Because, go ahead.
I really enjoyed it, too. I kind of hate that I hadn't read it yet.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I wrote the synopsis before I read any of the other ones because I didn't want to muddle up my memory too much of, like, what happened, because I knew it was going to start to blend together after a little bit.
Gotcha.
Where the cutoff was in the first 8 issues. It's interesting because the trailer that's out for this for the Netflix series, which is what we read this for in preparation for. I don't know when it's coming out this year, but it's supposed to be out this year at some point.
Right.
Hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was looking at the cast who's listed for this, and there's a lot of characters that don't appear until after the 8th issue, like several characters. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, he must have, like, blended some of the stories together because there's people missing too. Like, you don't see, like, some of the other Endless which are what Dream and Death are. They're part of a group of entities known as the Endless.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them aren't cast for this. John Dee is cast, but they don't have Constantine or Scott Free or Martian Manhunter. And part of me wonders if they're even going to do that. I kind of feel like they might stray away from the other superheroes.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. I know that I'd be interested, especially in like Constantine, because they basically cut him out of Legends of Tomorrow. Like that character went away, and it's because they needed a gap because they're planning on doing something with him.
Okay.
You know, like, I don't know if it's on big screen or what, but they're planning on doing something. So like Matt Ryan that played him in Legends of Tomorrow is still on the show, but as a different character.
Interesting.
Like they brought him back as a different character to get rid of that character to kind of give it breathing room before they brought him. I'm sure he'll be in a goddamn Batman movie or something.
Probably.
As a side character. You know, yeah. Like the way of the DC. But yeah, I wonder if they'll actually tie the series into the DC universe at large like they did in this series, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of other characters, like in some of the like poster art that they released.
Yeah.
There's basically like sigils or symbols that sort of represent all of the different Endless. Like the helmet is Dream's symbol, and then there's like a glass heart that represents Desire, and an Ankh that represents Death. And,
right.
But in the actual poster with Dream on it, there's a silhouette of a raven.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually a character in the comic.
Yeah.
They cast him as Matthew. It's Matthew the Raven, and he's cast as Patton Oswalt.
Really?
And so, like, when I was reading this, I kind of pictured his voice in a certain way. I did not picture anything like Patton Oswalt, but I can see how that might work.
Gotcha. Okay.
There's a lot of casting choices for this that I thought are a little strange. There's some good ones. Don't get me wrong. Like Gilbert, who's actually, I don't know if I want to spoil that for you or not. I'll let you figure that out when you read the comic, but they have him. Stephen Fry is going to play him. And I think that's probably not a perfect, but it's a pretty good cast for it, I think.
Okay.
Cain and Abel. I can't remember if they were in. Yeah, they were there because.
Yep, they're in these first eight. Yeah.
Yeah, those two were cast. I think they did a good job casting them. There's some other.
I know Gwendolyn Christie is playing Lucifer.
Right. Yeah. Now, Lucifer in the comics is a man.
Yeah.
But the first appearance of Lucifer does look like I said, it looked like Tilda Swinton doing David Bowie.
Oh, I tell you what, who it reminded me of is, you know, we see Lucifer in the old Keanu Reeves Constantine movie. And I think Tilda Swinton plays him in it.
Oh, does she?
Actually. Yeah. Yeah. Like if you can Google that really quick. And yeah, it's pretty bang on for what Lucifer looked like in this series. Oh, no, I think she actually plays Gabriel in the movie.
Okay. Okay. I was going to say.
But if you look at her. If you look at, okay, so yeah, Google like Tilda Swinton. If you Google Tilda Swinton Lucifer, the Gabriel yeah. picture pops up, but it's pretty identical to what Lucifer looks like in this comic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it yeah. is.
Interesting, though. That's very interesting. Okay.
There's a couple of other characters. Like I said, they don't show up until much later. That's why I'm sort of like wondering how they're going to do this. Like Jenna Coleman, she used to be on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And they have her cast as Joanna Constantine.
Oh, okay.
That character, which I'm, my assumption is, and I haven't read far enough to know this, but my assumption is she's one of John Constantine's, you know, relatives of the past.
Right, right.
She only appears in one issue that I've read so far out of the 24.
Oh, really?
And it's very, very brief.
So, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
But yeah, lots of other Endless here. They have Desire, Despair, Dream, obviously, Death. Death is the only one that appears in the first eight issues.
Right.
And the other ones don't appear till later, but they're also missing Delirium and Destiny and Destruction.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They may be hiding some like special casts or something like that. Or maybe they're afraid they'll give away too much of the movie or the show rather.
Yeah. I don't know. I know one of the things I had seen is that, you know, of course, because she's a person of color, people online are like, oh, what a horrible casting decision for Death, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I saw that and people were like, I wish Neil Gaiman was involved in this. And he's like, oh, I was. We saw over 200 actresses. You know, and he's like, and she killed it. Like, we knew as soon as she got done with her audition, You know? And so, yeah, I mean, I just don't get why people are like, oh my God, it doesn't look exactly like it is on the page. And I fall into that trap with minor things. You know, I think I told you, like, when I first saw the promo stuff for the first Captain America movie, I was like, oh man, I just wish his hair was a little bit more blonde. You know, right. And it's like, who gives a shit, you know, like, but yeah, I just, obviously people are more vocal when they're like, my granddaddy always told me when he put on his robe and fancy hat that we wasn't supposed to like them, you know, yeah, fuck right off, you know.
Yeah, Neil but Gaiman anyway. Said that the original concept for Death was based on a model named Cinnamon Hadley.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you Google her, there's some side-by-side artwork of, like, a photo of her and then, like, a sketch of Death. And it's pretty spot-on. Like, they did a pretty good job of emulating her look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, weird. Yeah. Cinnamon Hadley, huh?
Cinnamon Hadley, she's no longer with us.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, I think she died in 2018.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a person, but you're right. Yeah, I just Googled her. She is, yeah, pretty identical.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so interesting stuff. So, yeah, man, let's talk about things. your depiction of Burgess is spot on. Gargamel and Popeye.
Yeah.
That is the weird thing in this, is that certain characters are drawn so cartoonishly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's like that it's jarring, yeah. Right? Like,
well, I felt that way about Cain and Abel, too.
Yes. Yeah.
Really, like, eccentric hair and huge sideburns. And
yeah.
And they were never standing, like, perfectly. They were always, like, their bodies were, like, contorted in weird ways. Or
yeah.
Charles Dance is cast as Roderick Burgess.
Oh, really?
I really feel like it should have been somebody uglier. You know, yeah. He's a good-looking dude.
Yeah, yeah. He's not a bad-looking guy at all. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, so I was interested because I knew this, like I said, I knew this took place in the larger DC universe, but I was still kind of interested when I saw that he was interacting with just, you know, like Martian Manhunter and, you know, others. It was just crazy. Like I was, it's kind of because it feels so ethereal and otherworldly that it doesn't, It doesn't feel like it belongs in that setting, you know?
Sure. And like, as you read on, there's definitely less and less interaction with DC staples like that. And okay. It leans more and more into the ethereal and supernatural and like new creations.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. What about the art in this, man? So, you know, we've talked about, like, I think Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special is the last one we did where the art was just really hectic and kind of odd. And
yeah,
and that's how this is. But man, this really works well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it lends itself to the subject matter pretty well.
They also do a great job of, like, not just sticking to rectangular panels on the page.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but still making them easy to follow, you know?
Yeah, that's a gripe that I usually have with comics, is that it's usually hard for me to follow where the text is flowing.
Right.
But I didn't have an issue with this.
Right, no. And that, and I mean, that's just, that's layout and art. And so, you know, kudos to the artist on this book.
Yeah.
You know, which I'm trying to remember who were the first art, the artist in the first, these first series. That was, I think it was, Mike Dringenberg and Malcolm Jones were toward the end of the first eight. Yeah. Sam Keith also does, I think he does the covers, right?
So it says Sam Keith does pencil work and Mike Dringenberg does the inking.
Oh, okay.
And that's okay. For the first at least three.
Okay. Okay, good.
Five. The inkings changed to Malcolm Jones the third, and six, the penciler became Mike and Malcolm stayed the inking. And then it pretty much followed that for the rest of them.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, it's great, though. Like, it works really well together. It feels nice and cohesive. you know, you don't get to an issue where you're like, oh, this one doesn't look like it fits with the other ones, you know?
Well, the only thing I kind of like that I thought was maybe not jarring, but noticeable, at least to me, is that for the last couple of issues, which were drawn by Mike Dernjenbergenstein, I don't know what his name is. he draws a lot of characters with largely disproportionate heads.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
that's true.
The head is really in, like Dr. Crane, who, like I said, looked like Egon Spengler.
Yeah, yeah.
His head was enormous. Martian Manhunter's head was huge. It took up like half the fucking page.
Right, yeah.
There's a number of different scenes where, like, it looks like what he was trying to do was do this forced perspective thing where, like, Dream is, like, standing up from a sitting or crouched position. And so his head looks like it's leaning forward.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, huge.
right. Yeah, no, that's true. That is true. The body proportions and stuff are a little weird at times throughout.
Yeah, but it wasn't so bad that, like, I was, like, not into it, you know?
Right.
And they also drew John D differently. He was less like melty blob like zombie man and more like a skeleton with like a skullet.
yeah. He started drawing him more like Kid Rock concert Skeletor.
Yeah.
And less like, you know, Mitch McConnell. Cause yeah, he definitely looks melty at first. Like,
right, yeah.
He looks like a burn victim.
Yes.
And then when it came out, just that was the big topic. They were like, do you have HIV? You know, like, I was like, damn. Yeah.
Like, the big A.
Yeah.
That's what she called it.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. They kind of go in a couple directions, too, which I get that, like, a lot of gaming stuff is like, it's going to be grimy and, like, make you feel like, oh, I don't like that.
Ooh, yeah. You know? There was one issue that made my skin crawl a little bit.
Was it the diner?
No, it was after the diner.
Really?
Yeah, the diner to me a little bit, but man, I don't know if you want me to spoil it for you or not.
Oh, it's fine. Go ahead.
It doesn't really give away anything to, like, the major story, but at some point, Dream and then another person who takes like the central protagonist type position, she's introduced later, find themselves at a hotel convention for serial killers.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some of those people they're all cartoon characters, but some of them freak me the fuck out.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I was reading the 24 hours is the name of the issue, but the diner issue. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was reading it and I was just like, oh man, I don't know if Zach's gonna get through this.
Like, it was pretty dark. Yeah,
it's real dark, man. Yeah. I mean, there's you know, but they like not even just that, but like there's a young lesbian woman in it and they're mm-hmm. calling her slurs and stuff, and I was like, oh, like that's, you know,
yeah,
that's hard to stomach in and of itself. But then also, yeah, like it's how he's just like slipping into madness. This guy is mad who has control of this dream gem.
Mm-hmm.
He's just making these people in this diner. It starts out by just like not letting them leave, you know? And then as the hours go on, he starts making them do more and more depraved things. But even like not the depravity of what he's causing, you know, he starts out by just seeing what they're thinking and what their desires are and what they, like, their darkest secrets. Like, the one lady's like, oh, I banged a corpse, you know?
Yeah,
and
it's
like, and I was like, oh, shit, what?
Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, and then she, like, even goes, like, I asked my husband to lay very still when we were making love, but it wasn't the same. And I'm like, oh, my God, what is happening? You know? Like,
yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Yeah. And then the one guy, the trucker guy, who is basically having a fling with the waitress,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the waitress hasn't seen her son in years, it said. And he's basically like, yeah, when I was upstate in prison, like, your boy was there turning tricks in the prison and you could buy him for a carton of cigarettes. And I did. And you're like, what the fuck is happening? Like, you know, like,
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I was just like, oh my God, like, I don't like this issue.
Yeah. It gets pretty dark, man. There's some dark topics in this.
Yeah, yeah. Which, like I said, Gaiman is great at, like, writing things that make you, like, I'm not comfortable here. Like, this is a place I never wanted to be. But he then brings you back. You know what I mean? Like, he brings you back around eventually. But, yeah, you got to slog through some of that stuff that, like, makes your skin crawl.
Yeah. So did you know much about Dr. Destiny before this?
No, I did not.
I didn't either. So what I read was that the whole issue with him having the Dream Stone and how it came from the Sandman was like a retcon for this.
Okay. Yeah, I figured it probably was.
Yeah.
So it was funny because I kind of thought about it and I was like, okay, so the first thing was a nobody that had it. The second thing was a demon, which probably, I don't know that they, you know, his mask, they probably didn't write about this demon having a mask or anything. But then when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's a character. That's a named villain.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were just like, well, he has this stone that can do things. Let's just say it's part of Dream's, you know, kit.
Yeah.
And I think was so. Like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really know anything about him. I imagined that it probably was a retcon, but yeah, I mean, it works well, you know, especially if you think about it, it's like somebody who can turn horrific visions into reality and can make people dig into their deepest and darkest areas of their minds and enforce his will on them and stuff. And you're like, oh, okay, that's like what a dream does to you when you're unconscious, you know, like your brain creates things that you can't control. So it would make sense. It would make sense that it came, that they're one and the same. But I didn't know anything about him at all. But if you looked him up, like, you know, he's got like a Skeletor mask. Like So I'm like, okay. So I guess his appearance isn't that off.
Yeah, there's a panel in when they're in the old JLA.
Yeah.
And he's talking to Scott Free and trying to figure out where his stone is gone, because they acquired it from Dr. Destiny when they captured him.
Right.
And in the panel, in the background, there's a picture of what looks to be a closer rendition of how Dr. Destiny looks in the comics, before, with the skeleton helmet and the hood, and it looks a lot closer to that.
Gotcha.
So
yeah, I mean, I thought it was cool. I like Etrigan, so I was glad
that he
was in this. I think he's a cool character, especially the whole rhyming demon, and they did a really good job with the writing, because a lot of times when he's appeared in like animated stuff and other comics, it's really sort of cheesy the way he rhymes. Like, it's just, it's all rhyming couplets, you know? So it's like, you feel like you're on the boat in The Princess Bride, you know, like, anybody want a peanut? You know, like, that's how his rhymes feel. And this, they did a good job of like doing kind of an A-B-A-B rhyme scheme with some unconventional words, so that it felt less like you could tell that they were rhyming. In fact, I read like the first couple panels he was in, and then I was like, did those rhyme? And then I went back, because I was like, I know he's a rhyming demon. So I went back and I was like, oh yeah, like this word rhymes into the next panel. And then, you know, the end of the first panel rhymes and something in the third panel or something like that. Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's cool. You know?
Yeah. I also noticed, I think it's Dream, and he's like thinking this. So you're getting like narrative to like what's going on in the scene, but it's like, he says that there are other different types of rhyming demons, and some of them only speak in certain styles of poetry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I thought that was pretty cool.
I'd like to imagine then that there's a whole group of demons that only speak in limericks.
One of them was haikus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. One of them was only haikus.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I did like too that the Lord of the Flies,
Beelzebub.
Yeah, the Beelzebub character. I like that at first, when you first see him, he just looks like a giant set of fly eyes on an asshole, like with legs. And then, like, when they zoom in one panel, he's actually got a humanoid nose and mouth in between the eyes.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, there's one panel where he's like, I think it's during their wrap off.
Demon poetry slam.
Yeah, where it shows a close up of all three of the rulers of hell. And when you see his, you can see he's got like a humanoid nose and mouth.
Okay.
In between those big giant bulbous eyes.
Yeah.
Right on the front of like the, I guess, where his dick would normally be, because it really looks like it's just big eyes sitting on like the lower half of a person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All I could think was like, all I could think when I saw them go into that contest, because they were going to have they were going to battle or whatever. And then when I saw what it was, all I could think was like, oh man, Dream, on the surface, he looks calm and ready, but he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. You know, I went into that song in my head. I was just like, that's, but it was weird. I kind of like that though, because it is that like old school, you know, you always hear about like contest of wits in old like fantasy writing and stuff. You know what I mean?
Sure,
like,
yeah.
And so I thought that was kind of cool that it was like, it was basically they started with like the old woman who swallowed a fly. You know, like of thing where it was like, well, a spider eats a fly. Well, you know, frog eats a spider, and, you know, and it kept going and going. And then I like that at a certain point, he's like, I need to stop going on the attack. And so then he shifted what his move. It was great. It was well written.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really dug that. Yeah, man. What else? I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to talk about that I found very interesting. I did like that his like bag of dream dust was almost like a narcotic, like that lady was using it as a narcotic, and it made her lethargic to the point that she was like, her body was failing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was, again, a twisted, horrible story. They had to walk through her dad as a hallway. Or something also that...
Yeah, he was like spattered all over the walls, but still somehow alive.
But still alive, and he was like full of dreams, basically. You know, because they all started to reach out at John Constantine, and so they'd be like, no, you know, like, you can't get through here. And then Morpheus is like, you know who I am? Get the fuck out of the way. You know? Right, and they were all like, oh, no! Like, I did like, though, in the beginning when they capture him, and they're like, well, we've got Dream, not Death. And then they wouldn't let him go, and they kept trying to talk to him, and he went super emo mode, and he just sat there and wouldn't say anything.
Right.
I was like, yep, that tracks. He's just like, like, just sitting on a sidewalk in the rain.
So with that, like, I had to reread this part a couple of different times because I didn't catch it. I couldn't figure out if he knew when he was going to have the opportunity to escape, or if he was just, like, patiently watching and waiting for somebody to fuck up. And it's the latter of the two. I thought had a plan, and then what actually happened was in the last attempt to get him to grant them immortality in exchange for his freedom.
Yeah.
They're in there with Alex Burgess, and he's in a wheelchair, and his partner wheels him out of the room after the conversation. And there's the bottom corner of the panel, there's two panels in the bottom corner, and you see the chair sitting in one, and then it's like slightly ajar in the next panel, but you also see that the wheel has disrupted the circle around his prison.
Yeah.
And so now his powers are no longer contained.
Right.
And I was like, I missed that. Like, the first time I watched it. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I read it. I wasn't reading close enough to catch that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I kind of looked at it that way when I read it the first time, or when I read it through it. I was like, oh, he's eternal. You know, like, he's got forever. So I guess to him, sitting there for, you know, 3/4 of a century is like me sitting patiently waiting for a child to stop throwing a tantrum for 2 minutes. Like, it's just like, are you done now?
He does tell Burgess that time passes the same for the endless as it does for humans.
And he does.
It felt like it was going at a snail's pace.
Yeah. I mean, I think he said that, like, time passes normally, but it's kind of the whole, if you look at any kind of fantasy writing with, like, elves are supposed to be this incredibly long-lived race of people. And so they're kind of like, you know, you guys, like, humans, you're worried about like building a homestead and, you know, growing crops and all this. And they're like, we'll sit in the woods for 2 days and just stare at the trees, because to us, it, you know, it's the same amount of time, but who gives a shit? It's 2 days. We live for hundreds or thousands of years.
Yeah, it's the same amount of time. But no matter what, the older you get, the more your perception of time changes.
So absolutely.
Things seem like they're going faster the older you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I kind of liked that perspective, that he just like, listen, I can just sit here and eventually one of you is going to fuck up and then I'm going to be free, you know?
Right.
Although from their point of view, you got to imagine, because old man Burgess knew that, like, we can't disturb the circle. wouldn't you build like a retaining wall or something on the outside of the circle and just be like, nobody's allowed to get closer than this?
Yeah, you'd think so.
You know, like, you dumb fucks, like one of you's gonna end up scuffling your shoe across the edge of the circle or something, or drop a goddamn juju bee down in there or something, and it's gonna disrupt my whole spiel. So no.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was funny because I watched that when I read that panel, and I was like, oh, they roll. Yeah, that's all it takes, especially somebody in a wheelchair. Those things have a wide turning radius.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird, though, because I did like that his revenge on the guy was like, oh, no, you're just going to be eternally waking from one nightmare into the next.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the worst, you know? That's I've had a lot of weird dreams. The worst are when you have a nightmare and you wake up and you're like, oh my God, finally that's over. And then you're in another nightmare.
Right. Yeah. Like I brought that up because I don't know what I was expecting when that happened. I guess because he was in there for 72 years, I was thinking that he was going to be more bloodthirsty with his revenge plot than that. But I mean, I don't know. It's okay, I guess, but it felt like it was really restrained.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the emo approach. It was whatever. Whatever, man. Yeah, I did like, too, that they just, like, he was kind of drained of power and he had to gain power back. And that's when he goes and sees Cain and Abel and he's like, you know, their gargoyle finds him. And then he's like, oh, my God, do you have the papers I wrote to you guys? Or do you have anything that I did? And they were like, we have the, you know, Abel's like, oh, we have the papers that you wrote for us, like to give us our positions. And, you know, Cain's like, what are you doing? And he's like, great. And then he just like destroys them because he gets some of his power back. And I thought that that was a great setup. That was the Chekhov's gun for the stone being destroyed at the end of this run. You know,
sure,
the end of the story arc.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool. I liked when he went back to his palace, and boy, his palace, what a big old dick right in the front of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's got veins on it. What tower has veins on it? I thought the same thing you did, which cracked me up because I was like, the same joke. I was like, oh, that's the Morningwood Tower. you know? But yeah, man, those really trippy, acid-y trip, like, drawings and stuff that they did for the other realms were really cool. Mm-hmm. Really cool to see and look at, you know? Obviously, dicks aside, that's the kind of thing that I hope we see in Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with just these other realms that are just so fantastical and things, impossible shapes and, you know, just all that kind of stuff. I think that would be very cool.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, what else, man? What else did you really jumped out to you about this, these issues or this story arc?
So I just really enjoyed it overall. I'm really not sure what jumped out at me to make me like it as much as I do, but, I haven't been able to put it down.
Nice.
Just something really intriguing about the character. I also like some of his siblings, not all of them.
Okay. So we only meet his sister in these first eight issues. We only meet Death.
Yeah. One of his sisters, he's got another sister,
right?
Two other sisters, I think.
Right. Right. Okay. I had seen her as Death, you know, in images from this thing, but I never really read her. I like how they write her, at least in the one issue she's in this first eight.
Yeah. I like it too.
I like that. She's just like super happy go lucky, you know, yeah. like what was the
she like quotes Mary Poppins and
right. She's talking about Mary Poppins. She asked him if he's ever seen Mary Poppins. And he's like, no, she's like, it's amazing. but they do a great job too, of even when he's walking around with her, he's kind of sullen and like, you know, he's emoing. He's writing his Welcome to the Black Parade. And she's like, she's like, just hang out with me for the day, you know? And as she's walking around, he starts to realize like, oh my gosh, like everybody's scared of her. And I love, he calls it, he's like, everybody's terrified of her gift, you know, like the gift that she offers them, they don't want.
Right.
And I'm like, what a great way to look at that. You know, like you've lived a life, you've done what you were supposed to do. And now this is your sort of your reward is that you get to rest. You know, and there are some cool scenes there. Like when the, I mean, again, things that are hard to stomach. I mean, like the baby dies, you know,
yeah.
And like a crib death. And you're like, oh, fuck. Like as a parent, you're just like my, you know, I got like my skin crawled when I read that.
Yeah.
But I like that. Like immediately she picks up the baby and the baby's like, that's it. Like, like he talks to her like an adult. He's like, that's all the time I get. She was like, yeah, sorry, man. Like sometimes you only get a little bit of time. Like. I thought that was kind of funny. Like it was a good panel of levity right in the middle of this tragedy, you know, which was great. But I liked that the more they talked and interacted, you know, he would just like, they didn't show her flying people's souls anywhere, but he was just like, I hear the rush of her powerful wings, you know?
Yeah.
And then like, they talk about how the dream world and the dark lands, I think they call it, where she takes souls into the afterlife, are not dissimilar, but people embrace his and, you know, are terrified of hers.
Right.
I thought that was just so, it was very poetic, man. I was just like, that's crazy. That's really good. And she's just kind of funny too. Like when the guy's hitting on her and she's like, I'll see you soon. You know? Right, and the guy's like, she told me she'd see me soon, you know, like with no idea who she is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was funny. Yeah, she's a great character, man. I can't wait to read more with her in it.
Yeah, she definitely appears more in throughout the rest of the issues that I read.
Okay, right on. Cool.
There's one issue where she's the only other person who appears besides a new character.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, just there's some issues where it almost seems like side story.
Okay.
One that I can't even remember what year it took place, but it was like it happens over the course of like 500 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's an interaction between Dream and another character, but she appears in that one also.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because like you see the Endless in different time periods and how they have had to adapt their appearance to fit in.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I just really dug this. I mean, I thought that you see like, when you see the DC universe at large compared to this, like when he's interacting with John Constantine and Etrigan, I'm like, those make sense. So I was like, when he meets another hero, what's it going to be like? But I like that Martian Manhunter, I think that's a good one, first of all, because there is something like, I mean, he's an alien. He's, you know, he's got different knowledge and stuff. But mm-hmm. I thought that was even good. Like, it was a good interaction. It didn't feel super out of place, you know, like,
right.
Like Martian Manhunter knew who he was and was like, oh, shit. Well, it probably is in this place. And then he left. And, you know, and when he left, the person that was with him, I forget who was the other person that was with him. It was,
Scott Free.
Yeah. It was Mr. Yeah. Miracle. Mr. Miracle's like, who was that? And he's like, oh, he's like a God level person, you know, yeah. Like he's like, come in, let's have some Oreos.
Right. Yeah. So you know? Apparently that whole thing with Oreos and Martian Manhunter is like, that's like his favorite thing.
Yeah, that's his favorite food. It's favorite snack.
At some point, Nabisco like told them they couldn't do that anymore.
Really?
Yeah, so they had to change his favorite food to like Choco something. So it's sort of like an Oreo ripoff.
Okay.
Yeah, so you don't ever see that in the comics anymore.
Dude, they should call Hydrox. I'm sure Hydrox would jump on board that.
Probably, yeah.
You know? Hydrox, interesting tidbit, Hydrox is older than Oreo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it came first.
Yeah, which is weird. How'd he be the first one and be worse? That's weird.
I don't think they're bad.
They're not bad, but they're not an Oreo.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, Oreos are the bomb. They're horrible for you. They're basically little cylinders of poison because they're so bad for you.
Delicious poison.
But they're oh God, they're delicious. Oh my God, I just want to rub them on my face. Anyway, yeah, no. So Martian Manhunter loves Oreos. And so I think that's a funny gag that, again, he's from Mars, you know? And so it's like, I like that he came to Earth and he's like, the first time he tasted one, he's like, by God, what is this? You know, like,
that's funny.
Oh, you can just buy those anywhere. Are you shitting me? Like, I don't know. I guess it's how you can impress like mail order brides. If you're just like, I can buy bread whenever I want. I don't have to get on a waiting list. <It's> like, are you a prince? Yeah, I sort of am.
Yeah, as far as I know, they really, I mean, and there might have been a character in there somewhere that I just didn't recognize or know who it was, but they really get away from all of the, you know, famous DC faces.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. But yeah, man, I this was great. I mean, I'm kind of jumping around and digging into little things I liked about it, but I really enjoyed the hell out of this series.
Yeah, man. I did too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, I'm can't wait to read more and, you know, eventually pour through the whole run.
Well, now I'm really looking forward to the show because Neil Gaiman's had something to do with it. And
yes,
and I actually don't mind the cast for Dream. I actually think he looks pretty good.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. Yeah, it's crazy because I was looking up Neil Gaiman just because I knew he had written a lot of stuff and I've read some more of his stuff and all this. But man, the guy's all over the place, dude.
Oh, yeah.
And he's written some crazy good stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's also fairly interesting that he created the character of Angela from Spawn. I don't know if you know her. She's like an angel. It's interesting because Image Comics was started because it was a bunch of comic creators, you know, like McFarlane and Jim Lee and all those guys who were like, we're kind of sick of like just doing work for hire where we create a character and then we have no ownership of it. Right. And so they started Image where if you create a character, you own it. And Angela is interesting because, you know, she was in the Spawn series, but Neil Gaiman created her. And so when at a certain point they kept using her without giving him royalty and he was like, well, hold on, like you're using my creation. And so it went to litigation, I guess, even. And eventually it was one of those things where it was like, no, this is his. And then he sold the rights for her to Marvel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Angela is in the Marvel universe now. She's Thor's lost sister.
Huh.
Yeah. And I was like, that's just mind blowing. Like, that's crazy that, you know, she jumped from one comic book, like, imprint company, publishing company to another one because it was, well, the creator owns it. And the creator was like, yeah, Marvel, you can just buy her. That's cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So I'm always interested in stuff like that, you know, but yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, if you ever see her, you know, it's like you'll see her in Marvel now and it's still unnerving to me. I'm like, well, she's a Spawn character. What are you doing in the MCU? No, she's not in the MCU yet. What are you doing in the Marvel universe, comics universe, you know? Anyway, yeah, man, I love this, dude. I'm super excited about it. Reading more of it, you know, like I said, it gets dark at times if you're not okay with like some really kind of deeper elements of horror, like body horror and, you know, things that like edge on the teeter on the edge of like religious horror and things like that. Like, you may have a bit of a hard time getting through some of these issues, but I thought it was great, man. I thought it was well crafted and well put together and the art's fantastic. It really fits the story that they're telling. It was just good all around, man. I have nothing bad to say about this.
Yeah, I don't really either. Like I said, I read, you know, 24 issues.
So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You've done three times what I've done. That's cool. That's cool that you got into it. You're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Digging it.
Yeah, I'm digging it. It's pretty good.
Check out any of Neil Gaiman's work, really. Like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, the guy, like I said, the guy doesn't write much that's not awesome, you know?
Right.
American Gods is one.
Yeah, I was going to say, he wrote American Gods. I wanted to
check that out. And I've watched the show and read that. It's really good. So, Good Omens, Coraline, you know, I mean, it's a lot of stuff that you see converted to Stardust, that you see converted to the big screen,
yeah,
you know, or the small screen, which came from his mind. So
he wrote some Batman comics too.
Yeah. He's done some like mainstream comic work.
Did a couple of Doctor Who shows.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
One of the things that made me laugh, I was looking at his Wikipedia page, and there's a section of like his filmography, you know, and like he was. It's so funny. You look at his filmography and it's got, I don't know, 12 things on it or so. You look, it's like 2010, he was in the remake of Arthur as himself. Then in 2011, he was on The Guild as himself. And then in 2011, he was also on an episode of The Simpsons as himself. You know, it's like, it's just so funny. Like half of them are just him playing Neil Gaiman.
That's funny.
Yeah, which I think is really, really hilarious. Yeah, man. It's good stuff. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
I would say definitely check it out. Let us know if you've read it, what you think, or if you haven't, check it out and let us know what you think. You know, there's a lot to be had there.
Yeah, if you're at all interested in the Netflix series that's coming out that's based on this, I highly recommend reading the books, because based on everything that we've talked about and what I've read so far, you'll get very confused. I don't think there's going to be any way that they can make this work for somebody who's never not at all, you know, introduced to the subject matter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to fit the exposition into this one, I think.
Right.
If you're completely unfamiliar. Yeah. I'm interested to see it, man.
Yeah. Me too.
Can't wait till it drops.
And we'll cover it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll talk about it one way or another.
All right, man.
All right, man. I think that's all I got for this week.
Sounds good.
Cool. I'll talk to you.
All right. Later.
Grading the Nerd was recorded and produced by Zach Boyd and Tim Witham in Dayton, Ohio. If you liked our show, subscribe, rate, share, and review on Apple Podcasts or other platforms. For questions, comments, or ideas, drop us an email at gradingthenerdpodcast@gmail.com. As always, Anchor members can send us a voicemail. Our theme music was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find all of his credits and links in our show notes. Come back for more, and we'll see you next time on Grading the Nerd.